And we want to take a look now at the latest in sports technology. Mark McCluskey is the editor of Wired.com, where they live on the leading edge of tech. But so do the subjects in his new book. It's called Faster, Higher, Stronger: How Sports Science is Creating a New Generation of Super Athletes and What We Can Learn from Them. Everything from the latest elixirs, have you heard about beet juice, to the data-driven science. Forget that 10,000 hours thing. Tall is good for rowing, so Britain advertised for tall people to row. Shortly after, they were competing and winning. Mark McCluskey joins us from the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Start with the basic premise that you do in the book, that most of the huge accomplishments that have been made in the elite world of athletics have already been made. It's now a matter of an aggregation of marginal gains.
Yeah, if you look at sort of our rate of improvement across Olympic events over time, we're not getting better as quickly as we got better in the past. And the main reason for that is we've done all the easy stuff. You know, 50 years ago, we barely understood interval training. We didn't understand nutrition, how to rest after a workout most effectively. And so we've sort of checked off all of those big boxes. Now what's left, and you mentioned it, this idea of the aggregation of marginal gains, that it's stacking lots of little improvements on top of one another is how you get to big improvement now in the sports world.
Well, and every athlete is looking for that little thing. Let's do a lightning round of just the simpler things that top athletes are trying. Beet juice?
Beet juice. So what beet juice does, the nitrates in beet juice are changed into nitrite and then into nitric oxide in your body. And what that does is it dilates your blood vessels. It allows more blood to flow through them. And especially for events from sort of 5 to 30 minutes long, that's a huge advantage. You get more blood into the muscle and you can power the muscle more effectively. So there's been a lot of research on this in the past few years. Andy Jones is a researcher who's led most of this in the UK, and he was telling me that actually during the 2012 Olympics in London, it was really hard to actually buy beet juice around the Olympic Stadium because every country was trying to use it. It seems to have about a 3% positive effect in some of the studies.
Okay, there's that. But what about baking soda?
Baking soda acts as what's called an intercellular buffer. It's an antacid for your blood, basically. And so when your blood gets more acidic with waste products after working out, that can have negative effects on the power of your muscles. And so baking soda seems to delay that effect. The downside of it is it's really hard to eat enough baking soda to have this effect. For somebody, you know, who's about 175 pounds, that's about a quarter cup of baking soda, which doesn't sound like very much until you try and do it. The delicate term is gastric distress.
that will occur.
Is what people suffer. Yes.
Yeah. So don't be doing this, you know, unless you really, really get immersed in the science of it. Rollers, you went to Sparta Performance Center in Menlo Park. They were using pipes for athletes to roll on instead of stretching. And there's science that shows that actually stretching isn't as good for you as rolling.
So the sort of stretching that we all grew up doing, right? Like before we're going to run, we're going to stand there, we're going to like bend from side to side, and we're going to touch our toes, it is not particularly effective and, in fact, might actually decrease your performance. You know, a better sort of warm-up is just starting to move around some, getting the blood flowing in your muscles. And then, yeah, foam rollers, which is what a lot of people use, are really effective in sort of starting to loosen up your muscles without some of the negative consequences of what's called static stretching, that sort of toe-touching thing. And then at Sparta, they take it a step further. It's PVC pipes, and you know, they're very firm, and you have to definitely get used to that amount of pressure on your muscles, but they swear by it there.
Well, there's just so many of these little tips. Sparta also tells athletes to eat a gram of protein a day for every pound of their weight. If you're 250 pounds, that's 250 grams of protein. That would be way too much for a lot of people. You also say there's science that shows that just rinsing your mouth with carbs, what tricks the brain into thinking you had the benefit of them?
The brain lies at the center of so much of our lives. There's been this incredible research done about, mouth rinsing, basically, with carbohydrate solutions. And so the working theory right now is that we have receptors in our mouth that detect carbohydrate. And in anticipation of that carbohydrate entering the body, we'll sort of release more energy into our effort. But even if you rinse out your mouth and spit out the carbohydrates, you can still see that performance benefit.
But then there's the deep science. All elite athletes, it seems, are taking part in getting hooked up to machines, getting their blood tested. You did some of this testing yourself, sending your blood to Inside Tracker, a company in Boston that looks for 20 different biomarkers and then advises you on how they can be optimized for athletic performance. What did you learn?
They draw a distinction there between sort of clinical deficiency and deficiency for optimized athletic performance. And let me draw that distinction. You know, my vitamin D levels are fine for sort of the National Institute of Health guidelines. In their studies, and what they do is they collate a lot of outside scientific research, my levels are a little bit low. The other thing I found out is, and this is particularly difficult to hear as a 40-something male, my testosterone was a little bit low given their guidelines. You know, testosterone is an incredible performance enhancer for almost every facet of physical performance. And so making sure that those levels are high without doing anything illegal like doping and taking testosterone, you know, is something that they're going to push their clients into. You know, for vitamins, it's easier. It's supplementation. For testosterone, it's things like reducing stress.
It's Here and Now. Did you catch the Lakers-Rockets game the other night? Kobe Bryant trying to make shots, Dwight Howard trying to stop him. It reminded us of a chapter in Mark McCluskey's new book about something called the Dwight Effect, a finding that while NBA star Dwight Howard doesn't lead the league in block shots, he does lead the league in invisible blocks. His very presence makes players shoot less. How was this discovered? By a geographer named Kirk Goldsberry, who mapped the spatial coordinates of every shot taken in the NBA for 6 years. Now, many teams are paying $100,000 for a camera system called SportView that will do the same thing for them. It's just part of the technology that Mark McCluskey, editor of Wired.com, writes about in his new book, Faster, Higher, Stronger. There's also a gadget called the Optimi from a company called Catapult. Mark, start there. Australian rules football team coaches are using this to have real-time data sent to their iPads during games?
Yeah, the explosion of data in the past 10 years has really had a massive effect on sports. And Catapult is an Australian company, and they actually have a small unit that actually sort of attaches and sort of nestles in between the shoulder blades of each player. And it's got GPS and it's got accelerometers. And so in real time, as you say, I can see not only where somebody's running, but how quickly they're accelerating or decelerating. When they get tackled, I can see how hard they were hit. What Catapult has done is write software that starts to flag players like, this guy is slowing down, this guy's taken a couple of really big hits. Perhaps he's not as effective right now as he was 5 minutes ago. He'd be a good candidate to substitute.
There seems to be something very wrong with that. You know, that the coach should be able to see. It's sort of changes the job from a human one to a computer one.
I see what you're saying. I think that these things are incredibly hard to see. You know, I think a consistent theme in the book is how small these changes in margins are, and coaches can't see them. Like slowing down a third of a mile an hour in my top sprint speed is imperceptible to the naked eye, especially in the context of a game.
You look at the science that is continuing to smash some of our thinking about athletes, that, for instance, they're born not made, but they are being made.
Great Britain sort of has taken a big leadership position in a lot of these areas, and they look at events in a very specific way. They sort of break down what are the factors that lead to success in these events. And one factor that leads to success in rowing, one factor is your height. You're pulling an oar, and the more distance you can move that, the better. So they talk about having long levers as being a good thing to have. What they started was a program, and I love the name of it. They called it Sporting Giants. They put out a national call for people above a certain height who were playing other sports and said, hey, if you're above a certain height, we'd like to meet you. We'd like to test you and do some physiological tests. And through that program, they identified gold medalists. Helen Glover was part of a crew that won the first gold medal for Great Britain in the 2012 Olympics in London. And she had only been in a boat for about 2 years. She'd been a field hockey player her whole life. But her mother saw an ad in a newspaper for this program, and Helen went in and was tested and became a gold medalist.
Yeah. And Britain did something with its data to make its entire cycling team better.
Dave Brailes ran British cycling for about a decade, and the aggregation of marginal gains is his phrase. It's his notion of piling up all those little tiny improvements over time. So he really focused the entire organization not around like, okay, let's look for some big crazy thing that might get us a 2% improvement, because those 2% improvements don't exist anymore at this level. He's focused on, let's find a tenth of a percent. So we're going to spray down our tires with alcohol before the start of a track cycling race, which is a standing start. You're motionless and you take off, because we might get a tiny bit more traction out of that, will develop with Adidas pants that keep the cyclist's legs warmer after they warm up, so that as they're waiting for their race to start, the benefits of the warm-up don't go away as their body cools off. You know, they look at everything. They travel with their own pillows, mm-hmm. so they're comfortable in hotel rooms, and they don't run the risk of waking up with a sore neck or catching something that's left on a pillow from the previous occupant of the room.
Or so that they sleep better. And you have a whole chapter on sleep, the importance of sleep, the studies that show that the athletes that have a good night's sleep absolutely do better than their peers.
Yeah, sleep is amazing. Sleep is such a powerful recovery tool. And, you know, recovery has become this thing about hydrotherapy baths and compression tights, you know, those stretchy tights that runners and cyclists tend to wear. But sleeping... And sleeping as much as possible. When you talk to elite athletes, they talk about sleep all the time because they're amazing nappers, because they have to be and because they're exerting so much energy. And it can be not just a way of protecting your abilities, but there have been some really cool studies. Sherry Ma is a researcher down at Stanford, and she did a study where she asked the Stanford men's basketball team to extend their sleep, to sleep as much as they possibly could, which is hard to get college kids to do, but they did it. And their performance skyrocketed. I mean, things like 17% improvement in sprint time testing, which that's the sort of improvement you actually usually only see from things like doping. And so the idea that sleep can be such a powerful performance enhancer is a really, I think, a super important reminder to all of us.
Oh, there's so much more here. Running, most elite runners are about the same. It's how much force is in your footfall that actually makes you run faster. Usain Bolt has 1,000 pounds of force when his leg makes contact with the running surface. So you want to run faster, do leg presses.
We often think of running as not something that's particularly strength-based, right? And I think a lot of people think to run faster, what they need to do is move their legs more quickly. That's really hard to do. And research has shown that most of us have about the same leg swing time. Everyone from Usain Bolt to me, to you, to probably
impossible,
not my grandmother. you know, so the difference is not how quickly we take strides. It's how much force we generate with each stride. During that contact time that we have with the ground, how much force can we apply, right? Because just physics tells us that's how we move forward, is applying force to the ground. And the greater the force, the more quickly we will move forward.
Yeah. Well, but then the bottom line question is, and you pose it, when does this stop? Where's this all going? You know, if we're incrementally breaking records, getting faster, higher, stronger, as your book title is there a point where it just has to stop because we run out of the human capability? You ask, will my kids see records broken? And, you know, is the answer maybe not? What's the answer?
How I sort of end the book is grappling with this existential question, because it's, of course, part of why we're so drawn to sports, right, is that idea of seeing something that's never happened before. Like, nobody has ever run as fast as that. Mm. Like, that's an amazing thing to watch. I think we will continue to see records for a while. I think we will see fewer through time, and I think we will see them broken by smaller and smaller margins through time. You know, I pose this question. Andy Walsh is a researcher who works for Red Bull, the beverage company, and he previously worked at the U.S. ski team as their director of high performance. I'm like, well, you know, no one will ever run 100 meters in 6 seconds, right? You know, the record right now is 9.67 seconds. You know, nobody's ever going to run 6 seconds. And he's like, well, why not? Think about how our ancestors moved. Apes, right? We run much more quickly than apes. Somebody will run 100 meters in 6 seconds, but they might not look anything like we look today.
That's Mark McCluskey. His book is Faster, Higher, Stronger, How Sports Science is Creating a New Generation of Super Athletes and What We Can Learn from Them. He's also editor of Wired.com. Mark, thank you so much.
Thank you.